And we're on. Hi, this is Hadassah Head, and my co-host Zach just stepped out of the room, but we're here with Joe Weiss, who is a graduate student here at Binghamton University studying solar. But he's got some interesting background. Do you want to say hi?
Hi.
Hey, Joe. Hey, hold on. Am I? Yeah, I'm coming in, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is I think these are new spit guards or something.
Yeah, little pop guards. So yeah, Joe Weiss is here with us, and that's Weiss, not like the grocery store. Two S's.
That's right, we got an extra S on there.
We do have an extra S on there.
And I know if any of you are followers of the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Facebook page, you might have seen a video that was posted about Joe and his electric truck, which we'll be speaking about at some point.
That was on the Facebook group?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, a lot of stuff goes up on there that I don't see.
Yeah.
Probably because I don't look at it, huh?
No, you've got to check it.
Really got to check that.
Got to check it.
Checked it today.
There's the university put up a video just on Joe. So you'll be able to look that up. Maybe I'll repost it on the Sustainable Binghamton Radio Facebook page later today.
Did we mention yet that we're sort of awaiting the arrival of a Dr. John Philo of the bioengineering department, but we're not sure if he's going to arrive?
No, I didn't mention that.
It's been mentioned now.
So we may have another guest. Hopefully he's not lost. So, because that would be sad.
Dr. John Fula, if you're somewhere within radio communication and you're listening to this.
We are in the basement of the new union.
Yeah.
It's confusing because they redid the new union. And I mean, the old union's been redone. So the new union is older than the old union. So anyway. Okay. So, Joe, let's hear your bio. What have you been doing with yourself?
Well, I did my undergraduate at Cornell in biological and environmental engineering.
Hot diggity.
That's a degree I don't think we offer here at Binghamton. Can you mention a little bit about what that is?
Well, it's basically the intersection of engineering and biology with a focus on biology.
Okay. You mentioned environmental and everything too.
Oh, that's the part of the program. It's biological and environmental. You can specialize in biological or environmental.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I stayed on and got a master's in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I started working for a company in Cortland as an engineer.
Really? Well, do you mind us asking which company or?
Yeah.
It was Paul Corporation.
Okay. Yeah.
They're a filter company.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think that my stepdad used to work for them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. He was a chemical engineer. He worked up there, commuted every day.
Yep. So did I.
Yep.
So after working there for about a year, the commute got kind of old, and with gas at the time, it was around $4, $4.25 a gallon.
Oh.
And so I decided that I was going to build an electric car so that I could get up and back.
Are you really? That was why you did it?
Yeah, yeah. It turns out that when you're at the level of building the car yourself, as opposed to something that's mass produced and manufactured, the 45 to 50 mile drive starts to reach the limit of what you can accomplish building it by yourself.
Really?
I know the new Nissan Leaf is out, and it's got an advertised range of 100 miles on it.
Really?
Huh. Something like that.
Wow.
But
yours was 45 miles.
Yeah. 45 was about what you could get.
So I have this cinematic image in my mind of like, you're at the gas pump and like you're just watching it climb and you just kind of sigh and say, this is the end.
Yeah.
I've reached the limit.
Well, you know, the moment that I knew that I fell in love with it was I was driving it down Front Street and gas was like $4.25 a gallon. I saw it for $4.07 and I was like, oh, I got to stop and fill up. And then I was in the truck, which was electric.
Yeah.
And I thought, I am never gonna have to do that.
Amazing.
So that was
put a smile on your face.
So it's not it's not dual. You can't use gas or electric. It's electric only.
Correct.
Okay.
And do you still, is this still your vehicle?
Yep, I take it to campus on the nicer days. I still have a gas car if I need to go to Syracuse or
right.
or more than that.
Right.
And it's something that I've probably got about 200 hours into the conversion, so it's something that you want to keep it. You drive it on the nicer days.
Of course,
make
yeah.
it last.
So. Yeah, it's almost like it sounds like it's almost like your version. It's like the bioengineering grad student's version of like having a classic car or something in the garage.
Yeah. yeah.
Except you've gotten a lot more functionality out of it.
So, did you use a kit? Could someone listening replicate kind of what you did, or is this really need an engineer, strong engineering background?
Well, a little bit more background on me. I've grown up in the garage working on cars with Dad. We'd buy old cars, fix them up, and sell them. Or we did all of our own work on our cars, change mm-hmm. the brakes, the oil, and even into bigger things if needed. So so I did have a bit of mechanical experience. And so I found on YouTube, I was watching a video of a fella who converted his car. And I thought to myself, well, hey, I could do that. And so I bought a couple of books, and I read them. And the more I read, the more I was like, well, this seems very doable. And it's something that I feel like I hadn't been true to my environmental roots, you know, living in Ithaca for 4 or 5 years, you feel that that influence. So I feel like, well, I've kind of taken a step in the opposite direction, driving 100 miles a day, 50 miles to get to work.
Right, yeah.
So so what I did was I looked at the various parts that would go into it. There's a very nice company, Electric Vehicles of America, and they help you out. And they put together a kit for you so that you know that all the parts will work with each other.
Right.
So that you don't buy a controller that's not compatible with your motor.
Right, because that would be my nightmare.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, definitely.
So it worked out pretty well. It took about 8 weeks to convert it, but I was working pretty compulsively nights and weekends, so...
Yeah. You got it done, what'd you say, 2 weeks?
No.
8 weeks.
Eight weeks, sorry.
So 2 months.
2 months.
So, yeah, and the reason I used a pickup truck, there are a number of different avenues that you can pursue. You can build your own custom frame. You can go with a chassis. Like I, for example, chose a Ford Ranger because it's a truck. It's got a chassis that's built for holding some weight, which you're going to need.
Can you explain for the non-country dwellers what a chassis is?
Oh, it's just a frame.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I know anyone who's owned a truck.
Well, I mean, any vehicle's got a basic underframe.
So that just means frame.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So basically, how far you can go depends on how many pounds of lead in lead-acid batteries you can carry. So in order to get 50 miles, you need about 24 batteries. So that was the venue that I
So it's
pursued.
Actually more efficient to have a bigger car when you're dealing with electricity than to have a smaller car.
If you're looking for long range, it's more efficient to have a smaller car with
have less batteries.
Yeah.
Right.
Because all of that weight, anytime you're going up a hill, you've got to drag that
weight.
Right.
The batteries are carrying themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's a bit of a double-edged sword that the more weight that you add in batteries, the more weight that you have to add in terms of a beefed-up chassis to carry it.
Yeah, right, right.
So if I were to ever do it again, I would like to try just a really small car, like a Geo Metro or something with a very, very small frame.
Yeah. So how has this experience kind of like affected what you're doing now? Are you interested in doing more of these conversions, or are you just kind of going about your schoolwork? This is kind of staying in the realm of hobby, or
this is just a hobby for me. But it was a good, you know, it gave me some good perspective in the industrial and systems engineering department. Mm-hmm. We're looking at production lines, manufacturing systems, and this was a definite one-off. This is just a single production unit that is more reminiscent of what some guy could do in his garage than something that you would mass produce.
Right, of course, yeah.
So in that respect, I was already working with the trade-offs that had been made with that particular design of the truck to optimize it for a gasoline engine. Mm-hmm. So if this were something that you were to build from the ground up, you'd be able to make your own trade-offs,
right,
without having to work with what you were given.
Right. I see.
So you got some attention from the university for it. Who heard what you had done and told whoever it was that has the camera?
Well, I brought it in and showed the dean in the SSIE department and some of the other professors, and we went out to the parking lot and took a look at it. And I don't know who it was that
called the media.
But someone alerted someone.
So, wow. So you are doing some interesting work in industrial engineering. You mentioned that you do that. What type of work are you doing?
My research is focusing on the conversion of manufacturing solar cells instead of one at a time to a roll-to-roll, large scale manufacturing process.
So right now, solar panels are manufactured in a very slow way. There's not an efficient process currently.
Typically, the way that traditional silicon-based cells are manufactured, you've got they're expensive because you have these vacuum-based steps. You've got to grow a single crystal of silicon out of a vat of molten silicon, which in itself is as expensive as it sounds.
Right.
So you've got to do that in the presence of a vacuum, and you extrude it, and then you cut it up. And it's all this very, it's like in the movies when you see electronic manufacturing equipment. It's all the very high-tech, precise stuff.
Right. So your group's trying to figure out how to do that cheaper.
Yeah. And what we're doing is, instead of using inorganic materials, we're using organic materials that are cheaper, they're easier to work with. And the idea is that we're going to produce them on a roll-to-roll basis, which, if you could imagine unwinding a roll almost like newspaper, and it goes through a manufacturing process, and at the other end you roll it up, and it's a complete solar cell.
So it's flexible.
Yeah. And
'cause I think of, you know, solar panel, you drop it, it shatters.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any give.
You're right to point that out. I should have mentioned that all up front. It's flexible, both hybrid organic and inorganic material.
The way that we currently make that sounds like there's kind of this more traditional process of making solar panels. Would you say it's a sustainable process? Is there like a lot of waste that's created? Like, I don't know. Sometimes you hear about, you know, people doing these noble environmental things, but they're actually kind of creating a new problem. I don't know if solar panels maybe are could be included in that.
Well, it is a bit of an energy intensive process to make it's got to be molten silicon, so it's going to be at high temperatures. You've got a lot of vacuum based steps, and there are a lot of places where you need to input energy into the manufacturing process.
But what about, are there any kind of like wastes created, or is it mostly just, is the energy probably the biggest concern from the environmental perspective?
I would say probably just the energy. There are other types of cells. For example, cadmium telluride is an alternate material that you can make solar cells out of. I'm not saying that they're dangerous or anything of that sort, but cadmium by itself is traditionally a very toxic material.
Mm-hmm. So you have to be careful.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always a risk there, I guess.
But again, it's the same sort of technology that's in nickel-cadmium batteries. If you've got a power drill a few years ago, then it's going to be the same technology.
Hmm. Huh. So it, does it research seem promising?
Well, we've been able to make functional cells. We've started just doing it on a very small basis. That the coating techniques, they're just very simple. They use very small amounts of material, because the materials you're working with are, they tend to be pretty expensive, so you don't want to waste any more than you need to. And we've transitioned that to other manufacturing techniques that are roll-to-roll compatible. And our approach is to use solution-based processes, which is the same thing that, like screen printing. It's the way that t-shirts are made. You put a screen down and it's got a pattern on it, and you squeegee some ink, and the parts that are open, it goes through the screen, and it makes a pattern onto your t-shirt. So we've successfully produced solar cells using screen printing, and which, when you think of it that way, when you compare something that I can do in my home, like make a t-shirt, they sell t-shirt kits. So this is something that I can do in my home versus something that
has to be made in like a giant manufacturing plant.
Yes, exactly.
So people could potentially even make the solar cells for their community locally.
I would say that would be more of a novelty, you know, arts and crafts kit thing that you could do with, but I mean, depending on the particular materials, there might be some precautions you need to take to be safe.
Yeah.
So how long do you think it'll be until, you know, these flexible solar panels are ubiquitous?
Well, currently the efficiencies are kind of low since it is an emerging technology.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that way with anything that's new and coming out. But our approach is going to be, it's not as efficient as silicon, but we're able to make so much of it that it's just so cheap that you can drive the cost down that way. And the other hurdle to overcome is the reliability of the cells. That once you make the cell, you want it to be able to work for at least a couple of years before the performance starts to degrade.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of work to do with encapsulation and protecting the cells.
Yeah, I think something to think about is cell phone batteries. I think that's a common experience people might relate to, is that you get a new cell phone, the battery works great, it holds charge for days, it seems like your phone's never going to die, and then a year or two into it, every day you're charging your phone, and the longer it goes, the more you have to charge it.
Right, and there are additional applications that suddenly now that it's flexible, these become an application you could use a solar cell where previously you couldn't. Take, for example, if you're going out with an RV and you've got this big awning that that you want to roll out, and if it's covered in solar cells, you can charge up your battery, you can be collecting, where that's something that's impossible if you've got these rigid solar cells.
Mm. Yeah, so they're much more like resilient and portable, those kinds of things.
Yeah, there's been talk about weaving them into clothing, into a backpack.
Really?
That you could have like a messenger bag, I think they call them, or like a laptop bag.
Yeah.
That it's got a solar cell in it,
charging your laptop.
Trickle charges your laptop, or you put them on windows. Because they are translucent.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was going to say.
So there are more and more applications that keep popping up.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, I've seen the clunky, not so futuristic solar bags and stuff where they actually have, you know, little rectangular solar panel sewn on the front of purses, and there's some companies that make them. Then on the inside of the purse, there's a little charging dock.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen some stuff like that, or like for camping, they have like ones that you can hang on your backpack, but they seem clumsy compared to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the world of solar panels, what's like the shelf life of an average solar panel made like in the 90s? Because didn't Jimmy Carter put solar panels in the White House in the early 80s?
The performance isn't going to be as good as it was when they're brand new, but they degrade slower so that you can still get something out of them 50 years in the future. Mm.
Do you know how long solar has been around? Because I don't even have an idea. I don't know if that's come up.
I knew it at one point. the guy that discovered that you could convert photons into electricity, but I don't know that off the top of my head anymore.
Yeah. So in the future, you think you're going to be able to charge your truck with all solar?
I mean that's the end goal. The other thing is that solar is pretty closely tied into the manufacture of batteries, and the battery technology is really what my truck would need to become competitive in a global environment, because it's got personality. I know exactly how to drive it, and
it's temperamental.
No, not temperamental, but if you consider you took out a 100 horsepower motor and you put in a 30 horsepower motor, and
there's some limitations.
Yeah, you took out a gas tank.
Yeah,
and you put in 1,600 pounds of batteries. It's not quite as sparky as it used to be.
Sure,
but it'll still go 60, 65. So
yeah.
I've taken it on the highway, and but it's not going to be quite as quick to accelerate as its former model. So.
Hey. You know what? That's okay.
It's not too bad for the very first one.
Yeah, that guy, that's your baby right there. You're going to be proud of it no matter what happens. Even if it has a little bit of spit dribbling down its chin, or you're just a proud parent.
So we didn't quite discuss the fact that you're from this area yet. And you mentioned growing up with your dad and doing car tinkering at home as kind of an inspiration for what you've gotten into. Are there any other childhood memories from the area that might have brought you to this point?
Trying to think of something off the top of my head. I was born and raised in Binghamton. I've got a lot of family around the area. So my wife and I both do. So that we like to stick around, and we're both students here at SUNY. So, mm-hmm.
And did you have any family involved with IBM or any of the engineering?
My grandpa actually worked at IBM.
Really?
But he retired quite a while ago. But other than that, I don't know of anyone else that worked at EJ or anything like that.
Well, I was just thinking, because you're in engineering, and it's something I think maybe more people think about from this area, but I'm not sure, just because we have such a history of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was curious.
I definitely think that I got my inquisitive spirit from Grandpa and my passion to learn and to understand things.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And let's see.
Joe Weiss, everybody.
we're still hoping our other guest will turn up.
I wouldn't count on it.
So we may go to a break soon. We're gonna go to a break. Do some announcements, some PSAs, some promos, and maybe listen to a little music, depending on what our other Joe in the radio box there has found for us.